From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
With the approval by the Senate earlier this week of President Trump's choice for Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, a new direction in U.S. foreign policy may be in the making, particularly with respect to Russia. For more on U.S.-Russia relations in the age of Trump, we spoke with Dmitry Babich, a journalist with Moscow-based Sputnik News Agency. We spoke with him via Skype from Moscow Thursday. Dmitry, thank you. Pleasure to have you with us, as always.
Thank you for calling me. Thank you for having me on the program.
So let's start with NATO. They're busy again. What's going on? What's the latest?
Well, the latest is that the NATO is moving its troops closer and closer to Russia's borders, saying that Russia has aggressive designs, and that's why they need German tanks in Lithuania. I think that's for the first time since 1944, when they were driven out of there by the Soviet forces with the support from the UK and from the United States. The Ukrainian President Poroshenko announced that he would like to have a referendum on NATO's membership for Ukraine. He said that membership has the support of 54% of Ukrainians now. Just 4 years ago, it was just 16% that he acknowledges. Well, the problem is that with the kind of regime that now exists in Ukraine, it won't be difficult for him to get even 90% for NATO membership. Because, look, I mean, this is the only regime in Europe which prohibited 5,000 books, thousands of movies, about 500 various artists from Russia, you know, films with the participation of certain actors. Even the Soviet Union did not do things like that. And of course, there is a climate of fear in the country. Most of the media in Ukraine are saying the same things about at least the foreign policy and the relations with Russia. The only disagreements that they have is on who is stealing more. You know, which part of the ruling elite is stealing more. That much is allowed to be discussed, because even the new regime's supporters in the EU and the United States acknowledge that these guys are stealing, certainly more than the much maligned former president Yanukovych, whom the United States and the EU helped to topple in 2014. So I think it's a dangerous development if Ukraine does have that referendum on NATO membership. That will put leaders of certain European countries in an awkward situation, because Mrs. Merkel, you know, the Chancellor of Germany, Mr. Hollande, the President of France, they said many times that NATO membership was not on the agenda for Ukraine. They said that Russia has nothing to fear from NATO, and that NATO has no plans to immediately expand to Ukraine. The other issue is, why then did NATO give an invitation for Ukraine and Georgia or another former Soviet republic to join in 2008 at the summit in NATO summit in Bucharest, when George W. Bush was still in power? If you don't have plans for Ukraine to become a member of NATO, then why did you invite it? So if Poroshenko has on his hands, you know, this vote of people wanting to join NATO, it will be difficult for Merkel and for other ultra-liberals in Europe to refuse. And if they do try to make Ukraine a member of NATO, you can imagine how concerned Russia will be. That will be indeed a very hostile move. So, in my opinion, there are conflicting signals coming from the West. On the one hand, Wall Street Journal said that NATO's leadership suspended talks with Ukraine and with Romania on the future ABM system, anti-ballistic missile system that they plan to deploy in Romania, and that will also need some cooperation from Ukraine. So that can be viewed as a kind of not very hostile or friendly move towards Russia. But then we don't know how much of it is due to the coming of the new president in the United States and how much of it is just a decision by collective NATO's leadership. The other more hostile move is just the fact that German tanks, about 200 units in all, you know, tanks, armored vehicles, other units, 200 of them moved into Lithuania. And we have now an American tank brigade, which is now deployed in Poland, right on the border with Russia. These guys made a trip from Midwest, I think somewhere in Colorado. They moved to Poland, which is, of course, a very peaceful move on the side of NATO alliance. And, of course, these guys from Colorado, the only place where they feel like home is Poland, despite certain differences in climate, language, and many other things.
You know, certainly a defensive move for people from Colorado to place tanks at Russia's border. There's a lot to unpack here, starting with a referendum in Ukraine, for example. You know, when we talk about the electorate that would vote in this referendum, we have to look at the political situation in that country, including the fact that in the last legitimate presidential election, the party that won, the elevated Yanukovych, which means a majority party, is now outlawed. So, you know, the people and the strength of that vote was in the East, which is being fired at yet again by the Kiev government and certainly is not integrated into the electoral system at this point.
Well, you're right. Even though not all of the East, but just 3% of the Ukrainian territory is not under the control of the new Ukrainian regime, there are still more than 2 million people living on this 3% of the Ukrainian territory. I mean, this is the industrial region, Donbas, you know, Donetsk and Lugansk were two industrial cities where you have very high density of population. So these people are now suffering because Poroshenko obviously started another advancement just recently. Of course, the Ukrainian media, they all report that the attack came from the rebels, from these 3% of the Ukrainian territory that the government doesn't control. But everyone understands that this is obviously a move, not only by Poroshenko, but probably by some of Mr. Trump's enemies in Europe. I mean, right. What they can do is to start another war, active war in Ukraine, if Trump reacts and sends lethal weapons to Ukraine, that will be the end of his good relations with Russia,
right.
And that will be a tragedy for us.
And if he doesn't, of course, then it forecloses his ability to reset relations with Russia,
exactly.
Because, right.
Yeah, if he doesn't, they will say that he is just Putin's puppet.
Right.
That he sold out Ukraine to Russians.
Right.
And you can imagine the kind of rhetoric that will be used.
Yep.
So these guys are interested in the conflict in Ukraine right now. And Poroshenko has nothing to lose because the country is in a free fall economically. The United States is giving less and less money via IMF. The European Union is also not in a good shape. They're not providing much. Poroshenko himself cut all the ties to Russia. And Russia was the main market for Ukrainian industrial goods and for their agricultural products. So the country has been impoverished. He has very bad relations with Trump because Poroshenko, just like all the cronies of Washington, he put all of his eggs into Hillary Clinton's basket. Poroshenko's Minister of Interior, Arsen Avakov, quickly deleted his anti-Trump messages from his Facebook page hours after Trump won because they were so indecent. So basically, Poroshenko is now, of course, probably regretting the fact that when he came to the United States last year, he didn't meet with Trump because Poroshenko just excluded the possibility of Trump's winning the election. Basically, I think Poroshenko kind of confused the United States with Ukraine under the new regime. In Ukraine, under the new dictatorial regime, there is absolutely no possibility of someone not from the Washington consensus, someone like that, winning the election.
Right, the parties have been outlawed. The oppositional parties have been outlawed.
Yeah, in that sense, well, I mean, not all the opposition parties in the strict sense of the word.
No, but the mass-based ones, the ones with a mass base. The ones
you
with
have different nationalist parties fighting, but the real bone of contention in Ukraine has always been the amount of friendship, the amount of cooperation with Russia. And now only Russia's enemies are allowed into politics.
Right.
And that means pretty much only Mr. Obama's and Mrs. Clinton's supporters.
Right.
And in that sense, I kind of understand Timothy Snyder, that so-called scientist, specialist on Ukraine, who actually preached to the EU and to the United States to take the example of Ukraine. In Ukraine, Trump's coming to power would not be possible simply because it's not a democracy. So in that sense, I think Poroshenko was very surprised when Trump still won. And Poroshenko doesn't know how to behave, just like the EU leaders also. They are sort of vacillating between taking the position of Theresa May, who obviously wants to kind of be friends with Trump and to appease him, and the position of Merkel and Hollande, who are almost open enemies of Trump. And the European Commission is also enemies of Trump. So I think that it's in the interest of this terrible ultra-liberal group, ultra-liberal ideology, that Mr. Poroshenko is starting another war in Ukraine. If he starts a war in Ukraine and Trump has to react, this will be the first real challenge to Trump, because he will have to choose between two risky moves. Giving lethal weapons to Ukraine is going to bury the world's hopes for peace under Trump. Not giving these weapons would mean an outcry from the ultra-liberals around the world.
You know, just to be mischievous for a moment, Kiev, of course, does not recognize that Crimea is now part of Russia, doesn't mm-hmm. recognize the referendum there, of course, that took place, that overwhelmingly, approved that. Instead, it claims sovereignty. That would mean, of course, that the people of Crimea, under Ukrainian law, would have the right to vote in this referendum on NATO. I wonder if he'll extend that privilege to them.
I don't think Mr. Poroshenko will extend that privilege to them, because everyone knows that Crimeans were very concerned when NATO warships entered the territorial waters of Ukraine and Crimea in the last few years. Because Crimea has traditionally been the main base of the Russian Navy. I mean, the fighting Navy. The fighting in the sense that the most important naval battles that Russia had were in the Black Sea with Turkey or against Britain and France during the Crimean War in the 19th century, yes. So it is absolutely, you don't need to have a referendum there to know that Crimeans are against NATO's presence in Crimea.
Right. But you could at least add that to the tally when you make a claim later that it's been approved. So, all right. You know, the scenario for Ukraine could be, in other words, you have these provocations that are coming from Poroshenko with the support of some players in the EU and most likely at NATO. And just in that context, by the way, it should be noted that that one of the EU organs listed the major threats to the EU included the United States in the list of three now. The U.S., Russia, and ISIS, I think, were the list because of their concerns over the Trump administration's foreign policy direction.
It's a hysteria. I read the European press in French, in German, in English, of course, in Polish. And it's just insane. I mean, I understand now better than at any other point in the past that we are not dealing with bad countries or with bad officials. We are dealing with a very aggressive, intolerant ideology, ultra-liberalism. You know, just like National Socialism or Nazism was a terrible, terrible, terrible form, twisted form of nationalism. In the same way, ultra-liberalism is a twisted, ugly form of liberalism, which has almost nothing in common with the original liberal ideology. These people are extremely intolerant. If they declare someone an enemy, even if that person wins any election, like Yanukovych won in Ukraine, or Trump won in the United States, or Putin won it in Russia, they do not pay any attention to the elections. They continue to try to oust that person. So it is absolutely clear that there will be every attempt made to oust Trump. And in that sense, I think honest people should bear it in mind. I mean, I'm not an admirer of Trump, and very few people in Russia admire Trump. When we say that we are against the protests against Trump, we are not against the leftists, we are not against the environmentalists, we are not against women's activists. We are against the methods and the rhetoric used by the ultra-liberals in their open bid to get rid of the elected president. We have seen it in Ukraine in 2014. We have seen it in Libya. Attempts to do it we have seen in Cuba. So despite all the reservations that, for example, I have about Muammar Gaddafi or about Yanukovych, I still think people in every country should decide who their leader should be. It's not up to the ultra-liberals and their clique, which is powerful not only in Washington, but even to a great extent in Berlin, London, Paris. It's not up to them to decide who should be our presidents and who should be running our institutions. And the problem with this terrible ultra-liberal ideology is that they claim the fame of having defeated Nazism, and they claim all the prestige of standing for freedoms. So, for example, when they stage terrible coups against the elected officials, as they did in Ukraine, or as they are doing now in Hungary and in Romania, they tell you terrible lies, saying that they're actually doing it in the name of democracy. No. The Mr. Soros, you know, when he says he's fighting for democracy in Hungary, he should better look at Ukraine. The regime that he helped to install in Ukraine, as I told you, prohibited thousands of books and films from Russia. It prohibited hundreds of Russian artists from entering Ukraine. It was the most intolerant regime in terms of art and artistic expression, the most intolerant regime since the Nazi times, since Stalin's times. Even Stalin did not prohibit books by sectors. For example, in Ukraine, any book or any film that presents the Russian police as a positive force is prohibited. So we even had like New Year movies, very powerful, very popular in the former Soviet Union. We even had them prohibited in Ukraine. So when Mr. Soros says that I helped to install democracy in Ukraine and now I'm defending democracy in Hungary, I think he is not telling the truth. I think Mr. Soros is just a tragic figure because he lives in the past. He lives in 1947 when you had indeed good liberals against the terrible Nazi and terrible Stalinist regimes. But life has changed. Now the liberals have become almost as intolerant as the Nazis. And they start most of the world's wars. And they do most of the discrimination. So I think the honest people in Russia, in the United States, in other countries, we should not support Trump's enemies right now. It doesn't mean that we support everything Trump does, but this open disrespect for democracy, this open division of people into the good liberals and the basket of deplorables, These are things not to be accepted.
You know, it's an interesting choice of Hungary and Romania right now, both given the history, you know, going back to World War II. You know, there was, you know, strong Nazi sympathy in both countries and also very strong opposition to that in both countries. Now you have really sort of swept the region. I think the aggressive moves by NATO against Russia, I'm certain, helped to provoke in the populations of these people an understanding that if there's a war with Russia, their countries would be the battlefield. And, of course, a response against that, where you have governments that are more friendly towards Russia, and that's what's being protested now. And those governments are making a demand to, you know, look into, disclose who owns the NGOs that are organizing this, because much of it is from abroad, and particularly from the United States and some of its allies in the West.
You are absolutely right. You're obviously talking about the Hungarian government, where a person who used to be a good friend of George Soros in the late 80s, Viktor Orban, having become the prime minister, he started to do certain things which were not to the EU's liking, such as maintaining good relations with Russia. And this is almost a mortal sin right now in the EU. If you say you want to have good relations with Russia, you're under suspicion. Which is absurd, because it's like, if you look at the map, Russia is one half of Europe, actually. So when the western half of Europe doesn't want to have anything to do with the eastern half of Europe, that is absurd from every point of view, including the economic point of view. But you are right. If you look at the situation in Hungary and Romania, or in Greece and Germany, you can see that the EU, in fact, failed to appease all the animosities between these nations. Hungarians and Romanians traditionally had problems. And these problems were resolved in the framework of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Then they were resolved in the framework of the communist world after the World War II. The EU promised to smooth all the differences. And now we see that this is not the case. There is a lot of animosity between Hungarians and Slovaks, Hungarians and Romanians, between Germans and Greeks. Greeks accused Germans of basically stifling the Greek economy, of sifting all the assets out of Greece, and then basically now forcing economic reforms, very unpopular economic reforms on Greeks by the fact that Greece is bankrupt and Greece is simply humiliated by the huge debt that it owes to Germany. So the EU is failing with something that even the European community in the times of the World War, in the times of the Cold War, managed to do. They are unable to smooth the differences between Central European and West European nations. And indeed, you are right, the other problem, the other, I would say, time bomb is this idea to put more and more American, British, German troops right on the border with Russia in the Baltics. What are the Americans doing in Poland? As I told you, a whole brigade of tanks was moved from Colorado to Poland. I understand what they did in Colorado. I don't understand how they can, and from whom they can, protect Colorado in Poland. The Germans are in Lithuania. The Brits are in Estonia, which is like a 3-minute flight by fighter jet from St. Petersburg, you know, Russia's second most important city, with the headquarters of the Russian military fleet there, and a lot of defense, other defense infrastructure. This is all very dangerous. This is all built on lies. On Russia being perceived as dangerous and intending to invade other countries. We have this terrible list of priorities that you just mentioned, when, for example, the EU leaders say that threat number one is the so-called Islamic State, threat number two is Russia, threat number three is Trump. We see how irreconcilable, how I would say unwise these people are. They invent enemies for themselves. And Mr. Trump, I don't think he is an ideal person. I see a lot of defects in him. But the way he was demonized in the Washington Post and the New York Times, the problem is that exactly the same texts with exactly the same words are published in European newspapers. I think a lot of journalists simply should be fired for plagiarism, because right. What you read about Trump is word for word the same stuff. I can't tell you the difference between the Washington Post and the New York Times and, I don't know, Gazeta Wyborcza in Poland or Le Monde. The ultra-liberals have their own network of newspapers, which are echo chambers of each other.
Right.
And the problem is that these newspapers are the only ones who can afford having foreign correspondents in all corners of the world. So the world is becoming blind. It has been blinded by the fact that the ownership of the media is concentrated in the hands of several major news corporations, and they are all opposed to Trump. They are all pro-Hillary. They are all pro-Obama. And they have a very short memory. They never remember their own mistakes. They always blame the others. And they are so in conflict around the world right now.
You know, finally, if you look at the placement of German tanks in Lithuania, the placement of American tanks in Poland, and the continuous rhetoric, including, you know, for the EU, which means Germany, looking at Trump and Putin as the enemy, you know, with the provocation that Poroshenko is doing right now on behalf of some patrons here, trying to provoke a response from Russia to defend the people there so that Trump's hamstrung, you can imagine a provocation with German tanks, for example, or some German fire into Russia from Lithuania, and what a defensive move, what kind of outcry that would produce. And likewise with the Americans, if you had that and Russia responded, what is Trump allowed to do?
Well, I think that Trump has a choice before himself. If he continues to say that he is opposed just by some bad media outlets and some fools, as he called the people who don't want good relations with Russia, then he will lose in the same way Yanukovych has lost. Because Yanukovych, his hope was, okay, these guys are lying, the media is terrible, but the media is not important. I can survive it. I'll just wait until they quiet down, and then everything will be fine. They won't quiet down. It's the same thing as to expect, I don't know, if we talk about totalitarian ideologies, and I think ultra-liberalism is, of course, a totalitarian ideology, it's like expecting that Trotsky would forget to fight the Tsar and agree little by little to have a quiet, nice life in Odessa with his numerous family. It's like expecting something that a lot of Westerners did, that Hitler would be satisfied with a small chunk of Czechoslovakia and leave the world in peace. So if Trump, on the other hand, if Trump sees his enemies for what they are, a very dangerous new ideology, very shameless, very powerful, controlling most of the world's most prestigious media, starting wars, having connections to the American Secret Services and to the State Department officials, if he sees them for what they are, a terrible danger, and if he appeals to his supporters in the United States, to his voters, and to peaceful countries around the world, and there are many, including Russia, including India, including China, including Brazil, then he has a chance to survive. I would say, in the Greek myths, one of the heroes of these myths, he could fight the Medusa, Gorgona, only if he didn't look her in the face. With Trump, it's the opposite. He has to look his enemy in the face and name the enemy. If he names the enemy, and if he says, okay, I'm going to have a fight, then he has a chance to survive.
Dmitry Babich, Sputnik News Agency from Moscow, thank you very much. A pleasure as always.
Thank you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.